It is my pleasure to bring to you Dr. Anton Reese.
Please, I know you were holding back on that applause. I mean, you know, right down from Paducah. Let me say on the onset, as a fellow Rotarian and Paul Harris fellow, certainly bring greetings on behalf of the Paducah Rotary Club. As John elocuted so well, I continue to have the unique privilege of serving as president of Best Kentucky Community Technical College. October 1st of this year will be my 10th year at the helm. The only thing significant there, I think it's a 50-50 bet. How it lasted this long, because the average shelf life these days is about 3 to 4 years as presidents. And as you can see, certainly we've been very fortunate to be able to achieve some things, obviously with really our great our teams. John, again, thanks for this opportunity to be able to speak to you as part of the incredible efforts. You know, my wife was just mentioning, she goes, do we do as many things in Paducah? We really don't, not to that frequency for sure. So I definitely applaud you all for several of the items that you mentioned, right? All about community engagement, uplifting community, et cetera. So here's, and by the way, I can't believe I didn't acknowledge the First Lady, Cornelia Reese. We, December 29th, we'll be married 36 years. As she describes it, 36 long, long, long years. See, I could go on and on. I could mention some other things, but I'm just going to pass by all of that. That when we first met, she followed me around for 2 days, begging me for my number in order to get connected up in the rest of history, but I digress. So let's talk about, certainly, by way of my first book, The Secret Recipes for Success, and, you know, certainly see what sort of questions you may have, an opportunity really for me to capture this journey. Seems like every day that I add another notch to the gun, I am more and more reminded about not only the fragility of life, but also recognizing key individuals along the way who poured into you, obviously as part of that journey as well. So you can see the screen here. So first and foremost, like most of us, I pay homage to this lovely lady here, call her moms. Moms did not bring me into this world, but Dr. Gunn raised me in this world. I think I was probably about 4 years old. She is, if you was here in person, she's about a little taller than a podium, but don't get confused with the height. She was a force. One of the unique things with moms, she absolutely not only valued the importance of education, but she was determined that in Barbados, where I'm from, one of the prestigious schools is called the Lodge School. The Lodge School, real quickly, this year will be 281 years old. Do the math. It's been around a long time. Started off as a Christian college seminary under then Christopher Codrington. Lodge School sits in a parish called St. John, some would say in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by cane fields, and it used to be an old plantation. And so you do the math from that very site that was a plantation, obviously with slaves and that sort of stuff. To this day, even in 2026, we produce a significant amount of the leaders, both from, you know, I guess engineering, doctors, et cetera, to the top constructionists, top electricians. Something at this site was very, very special. Among those special things, as then we got an educator in the house, we had residence halls in high schools. And back then we were under the British Commonwealth. And so we had boarders, as people call them, coming from as far as, I guess, New Zealand and work your way across the map, right? All the way to the Commonwealth to Barbados on site. Both students, their families, and some of our teachers as well. Our motto in Latin was possunt quia possit videntur. They can because they think they can. So at that site, it was, you know, emphasized very early not to get confused by what you're surrounded by. In our case, it was sugarcane fields, but who you're surrounded with. And those were teachers with very, very high expectations, as I mentioned. Lodge was known very well academically and athletically. I got involved in athletics really late, the equivalent of my sophomore year, if you will, like in high school. Got a lot of success real quickly. As I outlined as part of the journey in the book. And so 2 years in, I was already national champion, national record holder, and a gold medalist in the international games called the Hampton Games in Trinidad. That got me a lot of attention. And I got an opportunity then to get a scholarship. It's where the good Lord has good humor, you know. He brought me from Barbados, past Miami, past Atlanta, to Richmond, Kentucky, in the dead of winter. And yes, it was a very different experience. You just have to read about it. You know, to say that if you ever want God to chuckle, tell him your plans. Well, for me, I knew, I thought very early in what my path was going to be. My voice broke probably when I was about 9 or 10 years old, very, very early. And, you know, fooling around at school, eagle-eyed teacher kind of picked up on it. Knew I wasn't good at music, couldn't sing, but thought I had this voice, blah, 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 and that kind of started that part of the journey. And so my first career was in broadcasting news. John, can I just kind of wet the pipes for a second? I need a countdown because I see some skeptical faces. I need like a 3, 2, 1. Ready?
3, 2, 1.
So it was like first it was the Palm Beaches, then Coral Gables, but now WHQT in Miami. Lock us in 105 on the dial with the bad boys of radio, Terry Alexander and the voice of Anton Green. See, I had to do that. Yeah. And so I just knew that that was my thing, but it wasn't necessarily the thing. Yeah. And so it leads me as part of chronicling this journey in a nutshell. Many years speaking to so many groups, none I take for granted. We were in Tampa a week ago. Had an opportunity to do some hobnobbing, you know. Stedman Graham, Whopper's husband, and Blair Underwood, the actor, and, you know, CEO of Red Lobster, and then work my way all the way across, leave from here, heading to UT Knoxville. But over 30 years, a question I always got after presenting is, so where's the book? Where's the book? Where's the book? For those of you who may be avid writers and it comes easy, I am incredibly both inspired by that skill set. For others, it's a lot of work. And so it took me many, many years of really finding, quote, the right time, right location to get in that mindset, that headspace, particularly after doing doctoral work, to the idea of writing that book. So bottom line, COVID hit. It was the first time in my professional career that time seemed to have kind of slowed down a little bit. Had a lot of mental blocks, getting the juices flowing. My older brother told me this kind of chronicle your journey. And that was really the approach that I took. It took me just around 6 months to write, another 6 months to edit. You got the manuscript ready, then you got to find a publisher. And that took me a good 3 years. And I was very intentional that when all was said and done, officially launching the book, April 10th, which is Mom's birthday, and she'll be 85 this year. Mom's is a unicorn, still packs in 7, 8 hour days. She's been running a veteran center for over 35 years, 24/7. And so I learned a lot, certainly from her perspective. Part of the genesis for the book was also capturing just leadership insights right along the way. And there may be exceptions here in Katy's, but for wherever I've been, regardless of the organization, I talk about leadership is complex because people are complex. You just never know on a good day where people are. I would also argue that within organizations, if you're familiar with the normal curve, I posit that in just about every organization, there's 20% of that workforce, however defined. If you get 22 vacation days, I could double it to 44. If you want a pay raise, I'd add some gold bars from Fort Knox. There's 20% of folk in organizations that regardless of what you provide, they will never be happy. And they're going no way fast. But they'll outlast you. And then on the other side, you got 20% of folk, like men in this room, all stars, right? Just slaying it, as we would say. My math tells me, though, here's the leadership quandary. That means the majority of people, though, right here in the middle, 60%. On any given day, which group has the most influence on the majority. And upon closer inspection, from a leadership perspective, two observations. One, we spend an inordinate amount of time with HR and troubleshooting people issues who basically are going nowhere. And you got 80% of the folk who, for all practical purposes, they're making it happen, right? The second observation is, you know, the ideal is, who doesn't want 100% of the team on the same page, right, producing, et cetera? The humbling fact is, can you produce the necessary outcome with 80% of your team? And that's the quandary that I put forward. Position and process, I would tell you that oftentimes, today is what, Tuesday? I meet a lot of young whippersnappers, even to the young ones in the room. If today is Tuesday, by next week, they're ready to be CEO or president. Well, they want the promotion, but not the process. And there's a lot involved in our process, which leads me to the significance of the title and this whole idea about secret ingredients. You know, they say, sir, that what gets on the cover is very significant. And I was very intentional at having a chess board. Are those familiar with chess? I would submit to you that there's two board games that still, I guess, is still pretty popular. One is checkers, the other is chess. Very different fellows. I would argue that within an hour, really good checker players could cycle through several games at a time. With chess, particularly if you've been to the tournaments, they put a timer on you. Chess, I believe, is a great mascot for leadership, because to me, it requires this three-dimensional sort of skill set. Well, obviously, you got to know the pieces, aka the ingredients. B, you got to be able to anticipate where your opponent is coming from. C, you got to be able to look beyond to see basically getting into the finish line, what that looks like. And so it's very intentional with the cover being the chess player. Now, let's talk about the ingredients. So the ingredients really is a metaphor for the mix. If any of you traveled, my neck of the woods in the Caribbean, by the way, has anyone been to Barbados? Good. So just in case the rest of you don't make it to heaven, put it on your bucket list so you can get a little slice of paradise. But so often people say, man, this food is really tasty. Yeah, see, a lot of it has to do with the ingredients, right? That's part one of it. So here's the picture of Mom's like, flip through this kind of fast. She's cooking three meals at the same time. I draw your attention to this first one. She's cooking some salmon, or as you would say, salmon. And you know, you can cook salmon really quick, in minutes. But you see, jerk chicken, curry chicken, we marinate those fellows. That takes a little longer. And I meet too many leaders that want the salmon wrapped. So you could have, by the way, the daughters, you know, they work backwards. They try to, you know, steal a piece and try to figure it out afterwards. I don't know about you, that would, by the way, with family recipes, but have you not sat with an elder, and back in the day, you know, you would try to take good notes, watch how they put together that ultimate meal, and then you would try to replicate it, and you just can't get there. Now the youngsters come and they videotape it. Even with videotaping, you go back and you look, you just can't perfect the taste. Because you may have the right ingredients, you got to have the right mix. But then I argue that a core part of leadership is leadership by doing. That doesn't show up in the recipe. Yeah? Everybody still with me? So look, there's a lot of ingredients I could pick. I identify 10. In the interest of time, I'll highlight 3. You purchase the book, by the way, we have some copies if you have cash. It's also available on Amazon.com. I'll talk about that later on. So let's highlight 3. First and foremost, one, particularly when I, as I would be heading to UT, speaking to some of the leadership groups, I argue that oftentimes it's the basics. It is the willingness, indifference, or lack of attention that you want to be sure that you're fundamentally sound in your craft. See, and that's the ingredients that takes time as a base, right? One. Two, self-organization. I argue that before we can organize others, we must first organize ourselves. And if you, I don't know if you ever worked with someone who's been very disorganized, right? But it is very taxing as well, too. I bolded 5, intentionally, handling criticism. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've met some of the best of the best. Really good at what they do till they get criticized. And when they get criticized, cancel Christmas. It's personal. I argue that criticism is not only inevitable, it is necessary. You must be critiqued if you really are I would argue heading on to the mantle of success. And then 10, again, to me, is one of those grounded reminders. Mental and physical wellness escapes many of us if we aren't careful. Got too many colleagues that have great aspirations of what they plan on doing as they get closer to retirement. Either they get across the finish line or in such bad shape they can't really enjoy it. And that's just the physical. What I've appreciated really over the last 10, 15 years, which used to be taboo, is the equal importance in terms of mental wellness. Because the two obviously are connected. And this one, if we lose this one, I'll be really in trouble. Are we good on that one? All right. So again, you may have the right ingredients. I say to leaders, particularly aspiring leaders, part of that recipe that separates the good from the great involves these additional skill sets. A discernment, timing. Oftentimes, it's a timing thing as you pursue that next opportunity or what it looks like. What are the metrics that you're really using of assessing the situation? Is it the bigger salary? Is it the name of the position? And then you get in and you're shell-shocked. Networking, which we know is always important, right? They say that your network is your net worth. And then certainly mentorship. By the way, let me park on mentorship because I get this one a lot, particularly from student groups. There's a difference between a mentor, an advocate, and a cheerleader. Upon closer inspection, I would submit to you, I see a lot of aspiring professionals, for all technical purposes, they have cheerleaders. So people tell them good things. And it's important to get affirmation, don't get me wrong. But if that's 99.9% of the delivery, I would argue it becomes almost self-serving. Advocates certainly open doors, but mentorship, plural, because no one person has all that, the all and to be all, as they would say, but mentorship is a longer sustaining relationship. Having an individual in many ways who could see something within you that you may not necessarily see even within yourself, that offers you that combination of challenge, but also support and insight. Almost there. So let me wrap up on this piece and see what questions that you may have. You know, people get confused because, you know, the legend shows up 6'2", about 210, movie star looks, you know, the voice of God, and think, man, have you always been like that? No, I've evolved. Two stories. One, working at a radio station, and one of my coworkers, this is way back, 2 hours in the radio station, there's monitors everywhere, right? The radio station, sound is money. And our cafeteria was on the second floor. And me and my coworker, her nickname, let's go with Big Pam for now. Big Pam was about 5'3 and every bit of about 260, 270. And these were the days when we had the reel-to-reels, right? So, you know, everything was just moving along. We were up in the cafeteria and we hear the infamous static, dead air, not good. And we are scrambling out of the cafeteria. I'm taking 3 steps at a time. And Pam is trying to keep up with me. Now, keep in mind, Pam and I, 2 hour shifts, could do every conceivable exchange, fat, thin jokes, etc. And she goes, Anton, you have to hold on for a second. I said, what's wrong? She goes, whew, I'm out of breath. Young whippersnapper leader, he went, well, Pam, but I can see why. well, wait a minute, what now? Well, it was a 2 hour shift. How about at the end of the shift? You know, we're good, right? Because we do this every day. Well, how about the end of the week? That's a long time, right? A month's rent. How about a month? No, that's a really long time. How about a year? Jeez, that's a long time. How about the friendship never recovered? Because no matter who you're working with, you really, 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 really don't know who you're working with. Wrong place, wrong time. And you see, in this case, as I reflected on it, we were good in the studio. The exchange occurred outside of the studio. Rules of engagement change, right? So the other thing I learned as a young whippersnapper is, you can't always say what's on your mind. Yeah? Last and certainly not least, consolidation. 1997. You like that, didn't you? All right. 97.
That's a lesson I tried to teach him for a few years.
See, I'm affirming it.
Here's how I said it.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Bite the tongue.
That's right. 97 was a pivotal year across the Commonwealth of Kentucky. The then Governor Patton went with a reform of higher education in terms of the community and technical colleges, and we were consolidated. I went to sleep Friday night in the 90s as dean of students of the community college. Woke up Monday, we had duplication in every position. And there could only be one dean, one financial director, one advisor, if you don't list. And I remember as a young whippersnapper, jeez. First of all, my name badge, when I was dean of students, was about as big as an iPad back in the day, right? Brought them into a room like this. Man, I'm reading the Riot Act. This isn't about you. It's about students. Grow up. Let's get over it. And virtual, not literal. Yeah. And an elder in the room, as I was on a roll, can I speak to you afterwards? Just as a tip. When an elder says to you in the crowd, can I talk to you? It means one or two things getting ready to happen. One, you're getting the greatest compliment you've ever heard. Let's go to option B, shall we? Or they're cursing you out without using a curse word. Brought me outside in the hallway. Verbatim what she said to me. She said to me, I remember she held my hands for emphasis. She said, you are a very, very, very talented young man. You're going places. She said, but can I offer you some advice? Her words from an old gal. So sure. She goes, there's too much you in you. What? I'm a prodigy. Do you know who I am? She goes, never forget when she said it and how she said it. She said, I bet you don't even know the names of half the people in the room that you're getting ready to lead. And she was right. It was a sobering lesson in humility. So I work overtime to be real intentional. I'm never assuming much about folk that I have the opportunity to lead or to cross paths with. But I evolve in my thinking. And at the end of the day, leadership is complex. And if any speaker beyond myself says, I have mastered the art of leading people, if they're heading east to Nashville, I want you to kiss your dog, grab the wife, change the locks on your doors, and head as fast as you can I-West towards St. Louis. Because no one masters the art of leading people. We get better at it, but no one really masters the art of leading people because they're that complex. And with that, I will pause to see if there are any questions, thoughts, reflections, disagreements, epiphanies.
I gotta ask.
Yes, sir.
Where's mom's now?
She's in Miramar, Florida.
Okay.
Still, yep.
Okay.
42 years. Yep. Yeah, she was an avid power walker.
So how did you end up in higher education?
So when you work in broadcasting, let's start with the working poor. Newspaper is really poor. Radio is right at poor. TV depends on the market. And the hours are terrible. The pay is terrible. It's a very superficial business with a lot of politics. So I got in higher education and, well, the hours are long and and so it's transferable skills. I had this sense, though, it was hard to really measure beyond the medium, the impact ultimately that you're making. In higher ed, it's direct. And there's something about being able to give back and to pass on, and higher education really became that conduit for me to make that shift. Great question.
Just want to say a fellow colonel.
All right, KU. Yes, sir. Did he eat at Ma Kelly's?
Yes.
See that? Huh? Ma Kelly's legend. You go into that little small shop, about half the size of this room, if not much. No menu. Yep. And she would just come and she'd say, all right, $2 for the chicken, $1 on the sauce. You come right behind her, and she'd be like, $1.75 for the chicken. Good food. Yes, sir.
Spent a lot of time in Stratton.
Stratton Hall, that's right. That's where they trained a lot of the law enforcement.
And the good guys.
And the good
guys. Fire department.
Fire department, that's right. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts about how leadership is, how change is in leadership with AI? You know,
so
the headlines, people are slashing teams. And in higher education, you've got the concern of graduating seniors.
Yeah.
Maybe not finding open entry levels.
Yeah, man. Yes, sir. So certainly that falls in the category of one of the current quandaries of the hour, right? AI is a tool, but it's clearly one of the most sophisticated tools we've ever had at our disposal. It does a lot of great things, but it raises certain concerns, as you pointed out. Safety is one example. In higher education, there's a great currency around, you know, time-honored work, right? Critical thinking, those sort of things. And AI basically accelerates all of that. So I get a lot from my faculty around the concerns around AI, the need for policies, procedures, which we must do. My press, though, is it's still a tool, meaning that to try to prevent students from accessing the tool, it's not an if, not even a when, it is here. And the fact of the matter is that we had some version of AI back in the day, from encyclopedias to Cliff Notes. There's always been some source that you can gather information from. And so we try to encourage where possible that it be about not as much the source of knowledge, but demonstrating the knowledge, right? And so doing, where possible, things in class in real time is one of the ways of, you know, trying to make that connection and distinction between research and getting information and actually being able to produce it. The other piece, of course, is the world of work, right? We get employers that are very nervous in terms of they are not that familiar with it themselves. The students seem to be getting really savvy really quick. And so within higher ed, we got to figure out in real time how to get students to bridge between the AI accessing the tool and still back to that critical thinking and those work ethics that AI are not going to supplement. And so I think that's where a lot of the work as we speak continues. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, sir.
How has the West Kentucky grown since you've been there?
So we have grown to, we are currently the fifth largest of the 16 colleges. And right before COVID, we were at 6,147, because I pay attention to the numbers. It took us every bit of 3 years to bounce back. And so as we speak, by the end of the spring, we'll be right around 7,143 students. We've placed an incredible amount of shift resources in high wage, high demand. Certainly you may have heard about the big announcements coming in Paducah, certainly in the Hopkinsville area, Mansfield. I mean, there's all these big economic opportunities. So that high wage demand, technical pathways, there's been a lot of shift of really getting students quickly to work. Micro-credentials, certificates, diplomas, two-year. So that has clearly been a big part of the growth that we've seen.
Mm-hmm. What do y'all hang your hat on at WKCTC that some of the other colleges don't offer?
Well, let's start with the river industry. I know Ashland, it's the only one I can think of right now. I'm not sure that JCTC in Louisville, but our marine industry is gigantic. In many ways, kind of, you know, at the scale, very, very unique. Second, to this day, we still have the distinction of being the only community technical college in the nation that you can get an entire professional engineering degree without ever leaving campus. So a partnership that we have with the University of Kentucky, we offer chemical, mechanical, and we added computer engineering technology on site. We also have a Challenger Center, you know, the part of the whole NASA piece, very unique. I think Hazard is the only other school that has one of those. And then we have a state-of-the-art art school. I mean, we're talking like New York, Chicago level. It's a gigantic facility with all the bells and whistles. So those will be among the things that make us very, very unique as a college. I think that helps too with our national rankings and ratings.